guest today is Jerry Nixon. Jerry, how you doing?
Well, hello, David. I cannot believe that your mom let you leave the house dressed like that. I mean, look at that.
Yeah, you're assuming it was my mom. I mean, we are wearing the same clothes.
We are wearing the same clothes because we're at an event together.
The USDX Hackathon.
That's right. That's right.
And what have you been working on?
I've been working on some cool stuff. You know, I work on a lot of Windows 10 related things.
I do know that.
And so I'm currently working on Template 10. And so right now, if you're a developer and you're about to start a new application, you'd say File, New Project, and you'd pick Blank Project. That's the only one that's there. It used to be there was Grid and Split View, but those are all gone. Just Blank. And there's a lot of upfront work, like just boilerplate stuff that everybody has to do.
Like putting in the Grid and the Split View.
Oh, yeah. The Grid, the Split View, the navigation, handling suspension. Just stuff that honestly is kind of dumb work that everybody has to do.
Plumbing
so
stuff.
I'm working on Template 10. Template 10 is a new file project, a new project template, I guess, for new applications. And it leverages the Template 10 library that's up in NuGet that can be used on applications that aren't new. So if you already have an application that you're writing for, let's say it's for Windows 8 and you're doing the upgrade, then you can start. You can bring in Template 10, the library from NuGet, to get some almost all of the benefits, to be honest. And so it's all up on GitHub. It's all open source. Everything is free, and it's all going to be in the template gallery. And at least today, I don't know when you're going to air this, but at least today it's not there yet. But we're working feverishly to get it there.
It'll be in the fall sometime.
Yeah, right. It'll be sometime this or next calendar year.
This calendar year, definitely. this is, you said the gallery. What's the gallery?
The Visual Stool Gallery.
Something different.
Right.
Let's talk about
don't
visual
sit
studio.
On the Visual Studio. Exactly. That's right. The Visual Studio Gallery, right? So that's been there for a long time now. Okay. Visual Studio 2013, that maybe is where they introduced it, or maybe 10, where developers can go and get all kinds of samples and things that are up there in the gallery. It's also where all the extensions live if you don't want to use the extension manager. And so I like using the extension manager, but that's where projects and things like that go as well. So once this project goes, it won't be in everybody's Visual Studio. They'll have to install it from the gallery by going Tools, Extension Manager, and then searching for Template 10.
Okay, and how about, is it UI stuff mostly? Is it things like adding a
grid? No. Very little UI, as a matter of fact. Most of it's the boilerplate under the scenes stuff, handling navigation, suspension, resuming, handling state management.
Okay.
It's awesome. I mean, seriously, it's awesome. It doesn't require MVVM. MVVM is the model view model for really applications that are built in XAML, love MVVM, but developers aren't forced to use it. But the ones who use it, they see the benefits pretty fast. So I think you should use it. Template 10 doesn't require you to, but if you do, you get tons of benefits, including right now it's just built into the Windows 10 framework anyway, that if you navigate to a page, it has an on-navigated to override. Now with Template 10, there's an on-navigated to override with the view model. So that was always a big, how is a developer going to solve this problem? That's how you solve the problem.
Interesting. So now you're doing a lot of Windows 10 development.
I do a lot of Windows 10 development.
What's the benefit of doing Windows 10 development over the style we were using for Windows 8?
You don't know?
Let's assume that they don't know.
All right, so here's what I think is really one of the best reasons, right? Part of it is, Windows 10 is the first one that so you could go across architectures.
Okay.
And so not only can I go ARM 3, x86 and x64, but I can also go into whatever is necessary for the Pi, Raspberry Pi, whatever is necessary for Xbox, whatever is necessary for HoloLens, and all the way around the block to every possible device, all without having to change the skill set that I'm using today. So right now, I'm using, I'm a C# XAML guy. I love it, right? I'm all into it. And so I'm building my application in beautiful XAML with all kinds of C#. That skill set that me and my team, we all get to use, we get to reuse no matter which device we go over to. And so there's sort of a misnomer, right? Where you can be on any device, and you can do it all with a single binary. So the work that you do, David, can run not only on a desktop, but it can also run on an Xbox. Well, that is awesome.
I should point out that's a key difference between Windows 8 and Windows 10.
Yeah,
we had to have different binaries. You can use some of the same
code,
but we had to compile it twice or four times.
That's right. So, and I'm a big Star Trek fan. So there we go, big Star Trek fan, right? And so we have to kind of redefine progress of just because you can do it doesn't mean you must do it, right? And so you have to almost step back. So I can have a single binary across all these devices. Is that a good idea? Is that really the right thing to do, or is it really meant to take and leverage the work that you're doing and making sure it runs on all these devices? Is it better actually to deploy something specific to certain types of devices? And I think the answer is a resounding yes. We all know that. We just feel like, you know, as developers, we feel like because we can write an application that, or a single binary that runs across the HoloLens as well as the Raspberry Pi, think about the disparity just between those
two.
Sure.
One's extremely visual. UI at all.
But that's not the right thing to do. I mean, there are some considerations developers have to kind of keep in their mind, and one of them would be a Raspberry Pi is a very small device and a very limited RAM, very limited CPU cycles, right? Mm-hmm. And all of the hard work that you may love to put on a full-size desktop or on the Xbox, right? That just does not belong, let's say, on a phone, right? And a phone's the same sort of issue. So do you want to create multiple releases or binaries for individual device types? I think the majority of the time, the answer is just yes, right? It's a simple yes. Okay. But you're going to reuse still 99% of your application, right? That code is still reusable. You just get to prune it back and say, this doesn't belong on the Raspberry Pi, so I'm not going to ship it to the Raspberry Pi. Anyway, I think it's a worthwhile, almost philosophical discussion of deciding the architecture and how that approach you're going to kind of hit.
I think there are times that you will want to share this binary. I mean, the line between a PC and a laptop and a tablet has become completely blurred.
Yeah, that's the truth.
And the line between a tablet and a phone has become blurred.
It really has.
And by the associative property, I think. Therefore, that line is you could theoretically use them all as long as you start small and move up.
I suppose you're right, yeah.
I mean, it depends on the situation.
If you're writing a calculator, a tip calculator, right? Tip calculator will run on Xbox as well. You probably don't need to make any kind of changes. Mm. But it's definitely, if you have a significant application where you're doing some serious investment, I think you've got to really consider some of the things that are going on there.
Let's talk about this thing. So the resources is a big deal. The amount of memory, for example. Battery life.
Yep.
What about the size of the device, the layout of the screen?
Yeah, so that's worth thinking about, right? We've shipped a lot of tooling for XAML developers, especially, to make sure that when they start moving from one device to another, so let's pretend we do write the application, that we decide we're going to put on two, maybe three devices. Not all the whole family, but two, maybe three. And we can constrain that in the store, right? So it doesn't go just anywhere. And so in those three, as the screen suddenly gets small for a phone, and then suddenly gets giant for a TV because they're using Continuum. You know, Continuum for a phone where you plug your phone into a TV, and then Shazam, you know, there it is.
So same gigantic. Application will run on
that
your TV screen.
Same app runs. Yeah, so you have all this new real estate that you didn't have before. Yeah. You want to be able to handle that transition. Mm-hmm. And so we have things like Relative Panel where you can move things around relative to each other. So the idea is, I have a panel, it's a layout panel inside XAML that's a lot like the grid, but instead of saying column is this and row is that, you say it's relative position to something else. So I have, let's say I have two boxes. I say the first one is kind of like the anchor, and the other one is to the left of that, or to the right of that, or above it, or below it, whatever it is. Okay. And so those are all the relative layout inside that panel. That's a really big value to developers who need to move things around in a simplistic way without creating a gigantic complex UI that somehow moves things around in columns that are hidden and then suddenly revealed.
Okay.
It's a big deal.
It's a way of getting responsive design from the different screen sizes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, we've learned a lot about responsive design already from web development. So lots of these patterns and approaches are kind of set in our minds already. We know how to handle the bulk of it. Now we just need the tooling for it. So another tooling piece that you get for XAML developers is upgrades to visual states. And so visual states is where I can define the way my application looks in two different views, three different views, whatever is right for me.
Okay.
And so we used it in the past for things like if I'm logged in, it looks like this, but if I'm logged out, it looks like this. And you would switch between them depending on your login state. Well, now I can create, if it's narrow, it looks like this. If it's normal, it looks like this. And if it's wide, it looks like this.
Right.
And I can switch between those as well. And we've enhanced visual states now so that they have triggers to automatically shift between those and you don't have to write custom code to switch between them. That allows you to have all kinds of reusable code that you couldn't use before it was all handcrafted. And it's not like it didn't work before. It was just this constant repeat of the same logic everywhere.
Yeah.
So now we get to put it in one encapsulated bit of logic that we can reuse everywhere. We call those adaptive triggers. They go right inside the visual state. It's pretty powerful.
Talk a little about how we're going to respond to the fact that we're running on Xbox versus we're running on a phone or a Raspberry Pi. It's tempting to put code in to say, if it's an Xbox, do this. Detect the device
itself. Like the controller, right? So the controller is unique. You wouldn't have the controller on a phone, more than likely. And so if you're using your controller and you're playing a game or whatever, you have all the APIs to interact with that controller or the Avatar API on Xbox. And you have all these things that you can do on the Xbox that is not on a desktop, just a simple desktop even. And so does that mean I have to have two binaries? And remember, we want to get back to where if we want one binary, it's an option for us.
Right.
Not necessarily we have to do it, but it's an option for us. And so the way we do that now is, in the past, it was always compile time testing.
Right.
So I would write a compile time directive, like a hash if, where I would say, if this is true, then it's the Xbox binary. If this is true, then it's the desktop binary.
Right.
And so I would end up with multiple binaries, even if my desire was to have a single binary run across all of them. So now in Windows 10, we offer runtime testing instead. And so instead of these compile time directives, the runtime directives, or the runtime tests, to be able to see whether or not these APIs are available. And we expose APIs no longer through assemblies, but through metadata, so that even when I'm on the desktop, the metadata for Xbox is still there, but I can test to see if it would actually work, and then if it's not gonna work, I don't call it. Which is cool because I can have metadata for my desktop, and then I have two desktops. One of them has a scanner plugged in, the other one doesn't have a scanner plugged in. I can test for those runtime capabilities, and I can interact with my scanner and show light up all kinds of features, let's say, in my application.
Okay.
And on your desktop that doesn't have a scanner, you know, a big flatbed scanner from the 80s, then I don't light up those features and nothing shows up. So I can do all kinds. It's not just across device. It's also kind of across just capabilities on a single device family.
Yeah. I think this is a lesson that took us a while to learn on the web. Mm-hmm. Like those pound ifs you talked about, those typically are, if we're running on Windows, do this. If we're running on Windows Phone, do that. But that's not a good style.
No, developers hate it because it gets out of control so fast.
Yeah, because you may miss something. Maybe that feature may get added to Windows at some point. Now you've lost it. But somebody may just plug in a scanner.
That's
now they suddenly have it.
Yeah.
So really, feature detection
appears, then you'll be able to use it on the desktop as well. Let's say Avatar API, it's on the Xbox, it's not on the desktop.
Right.
If we introduced it as Microsoft on the desktop, you would suddenly be able to use it because you're not testing, is this an Xbox? You're testing whether or not the API is there.
It's feature detection rather than operating system or device detection.
Yeah, that's a good. You really teased out a really good value.
Yeah,
there.
So we did. We went through this whole through the web. We had the browse cap, INI file first introduced, and that's when we first started thinking. Let's not test if it's IE versus Firefox. Let's test whether or not it supports that feature. And the same thing I think is happening on.
It's a really exciting time for developers right now. We're offering things we've never had before, and it's not vaporware. In the past, we were always like, it won't be long, you know, we'll be able to do this. Well, we can do it now. It's
Windows
10's
been out for a couple months now.
Yeah, it has.
It's nice. And you were actually talking about, you've got some courses on it too.
I do. At Microsoft Virtual Academy, there's several courses. And so the only real significant course right now, because everything's so new, is the Developer's Guide for Windows 10.
Right.
And so there were two preview courses. Each one was about 3 days each.
Okay.
And so I did the first preview, but then Andy Wigley has done the first production. And so the changes between production and preview are pretty subtle.
Okay.
It turns out these are additive classes. You could watch all of them and learn a lot of new things along the way. There weren't a lot of things dropped from the preview side.
Right.
And so you get some things on the final version that they put together, Shin and Andy did. And it's a terrific course, but it doesn't cover everything. So if you did watch it, you'd get so much more as well. They're very additive that way.
Excellent.
It's cool stuff. You've been to Microsoft Virtual Academy.
At MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com, yes.
That's right.
I've been there and I've seen you on it.
That's right. It's kind of like Microsoft's Plural Site, right? Only it's totally free.
Plural Site's also great.
It is great, isn't it? Yeah. Hey, we all get it. Yeah, we all love it.
Anything else we should talk about that we have not?
Well, let's see. I don't know. What's going on in Chicago?
Chicago's great. You have to come back. Come to Second City.
Yeah. We went there for the build tour, and it was awesome. Yeah. The next build tour is coming up. It's in November. We'll be back in Chicago again.
You just told me that a few minutes ago. I did not know, but I will be there.
Bam.
Mark my calendar.
It's going to be terrific.
Jerry, thank you so much.
All right. It's technology and friends.
Perfect.